Hey guys, welcome back to Rust Belt Running. I'm Andrew Hettinger. Joining me shortly with the coaching tip is Adam Wheeler. This week I got the chance to sit down with my good friend Adam Wheeler, and we talked about the Boston Marathon. He got to take it on last year. I was there, but I was there to spectate and cheer on my good friend and a bunch of other amazing people. So this year, or this week, we talk about that race specifically and his experience last year, including the logistical things, the reviews, just like we've been doing, but got to take a chance to sit and do it with him. So piggybacking off our normal episode from a week ago, you get this now. So I'm going to throw it to Adam here for a coaching tip in a minute, but do want to, you know, just run down the Boston Marathon a little bit. It has a lot of people, 30,000 plus people, many of whom are raising money for charity. It does have the qualifying standard, which has been just wacky and crazy. That's something we talked about in our last episode. And yeah, it's a difficult race to get into, but running charity is a great way if you're interested. And a qualifying standard is not something you're interested in or isn't attainable. Charity options are great. And if you go back into the archives, you can find episodes that we have with our friends Heather McLeod and Erica Gennaro, where we discuss what it's like to raise money for these major races to gain entry. So there's good information all throughout our podcast on how to get to Boston, but this episode is really about taking on Boston specifically. So yeah, looking forward to this time with Adam. Before I throw it to Adam, a call to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. Make sure you go to rustbeltrunning.com where you can check out our different offerings in run coaching, merchandise, things like that. Different ways that you can support the show. If you have a race you're interested in or a race you've run recently that you'd like to review, reach out to us. Like, we'd love to have people on from different walks of life, different areas of the country, different races that we've never heard of. Not too big or small. Give us a shout. We'd love to talk to you. So without further ado, here's Adam with this week's Rust Belt Running coaching tip.
It's pretty commonplace for runners to see something written on their training schedule and believe that no matter what they have to do it, that if it's written, it's set in stone and you have to go and you have to do the workout. And in reading about professional runners, I've been reading a couple of things, and right now I'm reading Scott Fobel's book, Inside a Marathon, which is about his 2018 breakout New York City Marathon training. One of the things he talks about in that book is how there are just days, and it doesn't happen often, but it happens a couple times in his training cycle, where just a day pops up and he says, you know what, I just can't do it today. Like, this is the workout that's on the schedule, and I can't do it. I'm just going to skip today's run. And it's a really interesting book because both Fobel writes about his training, and then his coach at the time, Ben Rosario, writes about the training as well. So you get this coach-athlete dynamic. And one of the things that the coach, Ben Rosario, brings up is the fact that for Fobel, you know, running is his job. And something that any of us can relate to is the idea that there are days, probably more than we care to admit, where we wake up and we think, I just don't have it in me to go to work. We're sick or mentally we're stressed and we just need that day off of work. And even though running isn't a job for me and isn't a job for anybody here at Rust, but running is probably not a job for you, my guess is that running is probably one of those things that you do most consistently outside of actually going to work. And so if you are somebody who in the past has really struggled with giving yourself the time and the grace to just simply say, I'm too tired or I don't feel like it, I need to take today off from this run, reconceptualize it. Thinking about it as a job. And if you think about it that way, it becomes a little bit easier to recognize that there are just days where just you can't show up. You need that mental day or you need that physical day off where you don't go to work, you sit on the couch and you allow yourself to recover. And when you give yourself that time, you hit the ground running with that much more energy and enthusiasm the next day when you actually do show up. So it's a subtle shift, but I think it's an important one that's worth trying. And like I said, if it's something that you've really struggled with, that the next time you feel like you need that day off, think about it like a job and think about it like a true sort of mental and physical rest and recovery day, just like you would if you were taking a day off from work. And you might find that that really helps you stop and say, no, it's okay, I can take the day off.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
You're welcome.
It's funny the second time, too. Just one more call to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. Check out rustbeltrunning.com where you can find out different offerings in run coaching, different ways to support the show, like buying merch and stuff like that. So, yeah, excited to go over the Boston Marathon with Adam Wheeler here. Thanks for joining me today, Adam.
So it's really weird to feel like a guest on my own podcast.
I know. It's really weird to talk to you like a guest on our own podcast. So you went to Boston last year. You're going again this year. Mm-hmm. It was your first time. What, you know, I mean, we know why many people do, but like, what was the, you know, the real desire behind that? We need the Cliff Notes version here, because I know it can be a very long story, people's origin story to Boston. But like, what was some of the reasoning behind wanting to go to Boston?
I don't remember exactly how I heard about Boston, or rather that you had to qualify to get into Boston. I mean, it's the oldest continuously running marathon in the world. But sometime in the summer, the first year that I started running, I discovered that you had to qualify to get into the Boston Marathon. And that just kind of lit a fire under me. It was this whole, like, it was a challenge. Hey, you have to run really fast and you have to be really dedicated to get there. And I felt like I was like right on the, kind of like right on the cusp where like if I trained hard and consistently for a few years, like I could get there. And I had no idea what that was going to take, but I was intrigued by wanting to do it. And so really it was the first big challenge that I set for myself as a runner.
All right. So you get to Boston. Where did you stay in Boston? Or like, do you remember like what neighborhood or town you stayed in the area?
I was in Somerville, and I'll be the first to tell you that I don't know at all anything about Boston. It's so many different neighborhoods. It was like about a 15 minute drive away from downtown. I stayed in a hotel. Boston Marathon weekend is pricey. Everybody understands that there's going to be 30,000 runners plus spectators plus their families, so the hotel and Airbnb rates are just jacked up. So I found something that was close to where our friend and athlete Erica Gennaro lives, because she was going to be helping kind of both you and I figure out the Boston Marathon experience. So I stayed somewhere close to her to where we could link up if we needed to. Like, it was actually her and Niles that took me to, you know, bus loading on race day. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be somewhere close to her.
I was there too.
You were.
I just had to be along for the ride.
Yeah.
Any restaurants that you remember that you would recommend in the area, whether it be Somerville or Boston specifically?
Yeah. So I didn't eat anywhere downtown in Boston. There was one place in Somerville called Highland Kitchen. We actually went there a couple of times. And it was just, we basically just broke out computers and started Google searching restaurants in the area, and it popped up and it had good reviews. And I think I texted Erica and Heather McLeod and said, hey, have you heard of this place? Is it good? And I think it was Heather that raved about it. So I said, okay, we're sold. And we went there, and the food was phenomenal. They had really good food, really good local beer. We ended up just going there twice, because instead of really kind of like hunting around and trying to find places that we didn't necessarily know about, and I'll add in here that my parents were with me, and my mom has a gluten intolerance. So that can sometimes make eating out a little bit dangerous, because you got to find a place that truly understands that. And Highland Kitchen did. So we went there a couple times. There was a Mexican place, too, that we went to. And I legitimately don't remember the name right now. It was really good. I do remember that I got, like, pulled pork tacos. And I sent you a picture, because they were very no-frills tacos. And they would have met with your approval.
Mm-hmm. I would dig it. I guess one question I didn't ask you. Obviously, you flew in to Boston. Mm-hmm. How much time did you spend before the race and after, you know, as we're talking about these restaurants and stuff?
So I flew in on Friday, because Erica had said that really you want to hit the expo on Saturday. You don't want to deal with the time crunch of Sunday. So I got in Friday night, and then we did the expo on Saturday, did a couple other things around downtown. All six of us went to the Red Sox game and watched Ohtani and Trout go 0-for-8 on Sunday. And that was kind of a low-key day otherwise. I ended up flying out race night, and for people that are flying, this is kind of the crappy thing about flying in and out of Boston. Again, everybody understands why you're there, and so rates for everything are jacked up. When you were looking at flights out of Boston, you basically, for something that was somewhat reasonable as far as cost goes, you were looking at flying out that night
or you were looking at having to get to the airport at like 4 a.m. the next day for the rates to be good, or you were going to have to do like a 12-hour flight where you were like connecting in Miami and hanging out for 5 hours and having to fly back. I am always really jacked up after a race. For as tired as I should be, I can't come down from a race. But once I do go to sleep, I'm going to sleep for 14 hours. And so we made the collective decision, like, let's just leave Boston that night.
Yeah.
We're going to get in around 10 or 11 in Cleveland. And then once we go to bed, we can go to bed. Because that sounded a lot better than having to wake up at like 3 a.m. the next morning to get to Logan.
I feel like we came up with a reason why you tried to look and switch your flight. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't know what it was either.
There was something we were going to try to do, or maybe it was just hanging out. I don't know.
I think we just wanted to hang out.
Because it really is a beautiful city. So I'd recommend, if you can, I mean, make it a vacation if you can. You know, this race deserves some time, and Boston is just a beautiful city with tons to do. You know, and if you're not running, you can do what I did and ride a bike everywhere and see so many really cool parts of the city and get lost and, in a good way. It's just a beautiful place. So definitely recommend that. And yeah, Red Sox game, that was clutch. We had a great
Fenway's
time.
Amazing. Yeah.
Going there. I was giddy. I was like, little 8-year-old me was so excited to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. I wanted to go back to the restaurants real quick. Some of these things I'm going to throw in my own little recommendations from my trip last year.
Yeah, you should, because your experience was different from mine.
Looking for carb load, Hot Box Pizza, if you're in the Somerville area, there's a small little joint called Hot Box. Look it up. I don't know where it is now or if it's in the same location, because there's like this really cool concept that they have in this town of Boston, where like they get all these small like startup companies to come in and they give them like really cheap rent until they can kind of branch out to like a permanent location. But like people like kind of descend on this place for all these different shops and food and whatever. And that's where Hot Box was. I think it's still there based on the address I just pulled up. But Hot Box Pizza, it's incredible. Their pepperoni was like super spicy. But the pizza was so good. I ate the whole thing. I think I ate 2 whole ones while I was there. I think we got it twice and I slammed an entire, definitely not a personal pizza to myself. So, recommend that for sure. All right, let's go to the expo. You kind of brought that up. Oh, one other thing just about the travel. If you haven't done this before and you fly, be prepared to get emotional as soon as you walk off of the plane. Like the whole city is like ready for you.
Yes.
And if you fly, be prepared to get emotional when you get back on the plane. So to leave, because it's, I mean, everybody,
They ask when you're gonna fly out. They ask, like, did anybody here run the Boston Marathon today? And of course everyone's still wearing their medals. You can tell by the marathon shuffle. So they ask you to stand up and you're like, do I really have to? Okay, fine. And then they actually board you first, you know. So think about like how planes typically board, and I'm always like the last person who's going to be boarded because I fly economy. Anybody who flew the Boston Marathon or who ran the Boston Marathon and their families, like, you went to the front of the line, you were on the plane first. It is really cool. Like, that race is their baby. They are so happy you are there. Everywhere we went last year, you here for the race? Yeah. Oh my God, good luck. We're so happy you're here. Like, that is just the vibe in that city.
All right. So now we'll go to the expo. You're there. It's a madhouse on Boylston.
It is. And that is the cool thing, is they shut down Boylston. So you have the run of essentially that last 600 yards of the race course. You have your run of that street.
Last year was something special too. Yeah. Just as we, dang, this is turning into a dual review. We'll get to where I'm not going to say much. I swear,
man,
to God.
Man, you were there. You experienced a lot of it in a way that I didn't experience. So you should throw in some suggestions and your own remembrances.
It was, they do shut down Boylston, and you do have run, but last year being the 10-year anniversary of the bombing, it was something special to go towards that finish. I was like, hey, we need to get you towards the finish so you can see that. We didn't realize what time we were coming up on, which was the time that the bombs went off.
Mm-hmm.
And Whoo, man, to be there for that, to have that many people around and to have it be so quiet.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah. If you want to go back and listen to our kind of recap of that week from last year, I'm not sure what episode it is offhand, but we didn't record that many last year, so you shouldn't have to scroll back too far.
Nope.
But yeah, that was really something to behold. So I don't think that's there every year. I'm pretty sure that was just for the 10-year, but they may do some type of ceremony every year at the time. But
yeah.
I didn't realize that, like, that Saturday when we went to the expo was the 10-year anniversary, and we were there at the yeah, we left the expo at the time that the bombs went off, and that was, I don't want to say cool, but that was, it was special. It was very special to be there. So I'm going to let you take the expo experience, because my anxiety will go through the freaking roof if I have to recall any of it.
You know, you and I have both talked about expos at other races where we hate, like, the sort of, you know, the booths for the supplies and the stuff that, like, you couldn't care less about. Like, I don't need to buy any gutters or windows. Boston's not like that at all. Boston is essentially, it's two things. It is a museum to the Boston Marathon, which is cool, and that it is basically a very long line to get into the official Adidas store. It isn't like a lot of races where there's different vendors that are selling stuff. It is all Adidas Boston Marathon apparel, and the line to get into that area, it snakes and goes forever. Honestly, I found the expo to be a pain in the ass. I didn't typically enjoy it. It was really cool to get my stuff, but even then, like, getting your bid, you are in lines and you're snaking through this convention center and you get it, and that's really, really cool. And I got incredibly emotional when I got that bib for the first time. You know, but everything after that, I really could have done without. Like, even thinking about going back this year, I don't need to spend any money. I'm there to get my stuff and go. I'm not going to be doing nearly as much as I did last year. It's just
order your jacket online and just avoid it. Like, I that's exactly what I would do. It was so much last year. There is a section for, like, the smaller vendors and stuff.
Is there? I don't think I ever actually saw it.
Well, and so the problem is you're on such sensory overload and just, like, for me, it's like almost anxiety attack that I just wanted to get out of there. So even when I saw that, and I did see, I believe it was a gutter person, I did see one and I laughed. I might have a picture of it.
Okay. I don't think I ever actually found that part of the expo.
Yeah, because you just wanted to leave. Yeah. But, like, yeah, the contract is basically, like, it's Adidas in Boston only in the main part of the expo. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just kind of tons of photo ops. And, yeah, so if you've not been to Boston or any – I will say I don't think Chicago is the exact same. I thought Chicago was a little more reasonable.
Okay.
Yeah, it's major expos are a disaster. So if you're expecting to have a good time at the expo, don't.
The theme of Boston is just consistently being surrounded by people.
Yeah. How did you feel about the swag that you got from the expo as far as what was included with race entry?
Really, really nice. Probably the best of any race that I've been to. Really awesome long sleeve shirt. And I love it because they don't do the whole, like, there's multiple sponsors that sponsor Boston, but, you know, the main sponsor has been John Hancock. It's US Bank now, I think. Bank of America. Thank you. But really nice long sleeve shirts, just has John Hancock on there. Nothing else. You know, you got a beer bottle opener by Sam Adams. They have actual, like, really good post-race food, you know, like protein bars and Gatorade and, you know, protein water, things like that, like legit good stuff to eat and drink after a race. And I think because there's not, like, a huge focus on vendors, there's not, like, a ton of, like, the cheap ads that you would need to have. It really is just, like, geared towards what the runner would want. So probably some of the best swag that I got.
Mm-hmm. Check your phone. that's good to know. Yeah, did you feel like it? Boston's a more expensive race. Did you? Leaf Guard.
That's amazing.
I actually could use that because my gutters definitely need cleaned. And if I had leaf, if I would have got leaf guard last year at the Boston Marathon Expo,
we'd have to do it.
I wouldn't have to worry about my gutters. I don't remember what I was like. Did, so it's more expensive, right? Do you feel like you got pretty good value as far as like what the race entry was versus what you walked away from the race with?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, between the swag being really, really good, and then just, you know, we'll talk about it further as we go on, but the logistics of staging that race, of getting to the start line, they've got to charge you what they charge you, because it is not a race like Columbus or Cleveland where you can drive downtown and park and walk to the start and finish line. Like, it is a logistical challenge to put all that on, and you understand. And then when you talk about, you know, the bombings, like, you've got to have that place secured. Right. I felt like the value was good.
Let's move to the transportation. So Erica Niles and I pick you up at the La Quinta that you stayed at.
I didn't even remember where I stayed.
I have a ridiculously good memory. It's a blessing and a curse. So we pick you up there, and we take you, Niles and I take you and Erica to downtown where the buses were picking you up.
Yep.
Kind of run us through that a little bit, what was that like point-to-point course? You have to go from downtown Boston to Hopkinton.
Yep.
What was that process like?
Okay, so Boston race day is a combination of a lot of standing, a lot of walking, and a lot of waiting. So the buses load at a park that is beyond the finish line. So if you are running up Boylston, imagine going beyond the finish line. And there are school buses lined up beyond the finish line, and that is where you check your bags. And the buses have signs, you know, it's all tailored towards your bib number. So you guys dropped me off at the park. I'd had walked back towards the finish line, drop off my stuff. This is difficult because anything you're going to want to have with you, you have to take, but you can't, there's no place to check it once you get to the start line. So, like, if you want to have your phone with you, you're going to run with your phone.
Right.
Because there's no place to check it once you get on the bus. So you got to have throwaway clothes. I actually took throwaway shoes because it was wet that day. You've got to plan for all this. And what's really great is that they have places throughout, you know, before you get on the bus and then from the athlete's village to the start line where you can drop off shoes, clothes, everything. But you got to have that. So you walk back to the buses, you check your stuff, then you go back to the park. They are incredibly well organized because there's four waves with Boston. And so the buses leave at different times, and it's only for the people that are in those waves. So they're very good about checking your bib, you know, first to even just get into the park so that you can start lining up to get to the buses. But then it's a bunch of people that are waiting in line for porta potties, then waiting in line to get to the buses. And it's honestly just kind of a clusterfuck trying to do all this stuff. I actually ended up getting really lucky because I was late, like essentially like late to get to the bus that I needed to get on. And I was in line for a porta potty, and there were some women, they had started calling the wave after me. And there were some women that knew that I was in wave two, and they saw that they were starting to like get people in line for wave two for the buses. And the women in the porta potty line from wave three were like, get in front of us, go, go, go. Like, get up there, do your thing, get onto the bus. Like, you need to be up there more than we do. Right. So you go through that, you get in line. And what I will tell you is the organizers, the volunteers, they are so good about handling this chaos. They're upbeat, they're positive, they understand there's some frustration, like, we don't know where to go. They make sure that you're where you need to be, but it is truly like herding cattle, trying to get everybody where they need to go. So you pass the porta potties, you get in line to get on the buses, then you get on the bus, and it's about an hour drive to get to Hopkinton. It's not back roads that you're taking, but it's not really main highways either.
Right.
And so you get out there, you're battling traffic. Actually, my bus got kind of just like stuck in a traffic jam. So you get off the main highway, then you're taking back roads to the school that they're going to drop you off at. And what is really cool is that once you start to get onto those back roads, there are people that are on their porches that will have their porches decked out in like yellow and blue balloons and streamers that are cheering you. You're not even on the course. You're driving to the athlete's village.
Yeah, it's nice.
And they're like just waving their hands and supporting you. Then you get to the athlete's village, and it's just a shit ton of porta potties. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Real quick, before we get too far from the bus, I want to ask. So, like, it's a pretty long bus ride.
Yeah.
What, like, with that amount of time, what was some of your, like, process that you, were you fueling? Were you just trying to rest? What was What were you doing? What were some tips that you might have for people who maybe don't experience that long of a trip? And also, like, what time were you on the bus versus what time did you start? I'm curious.
Oh, good points. You know, give me a second because I can pull up. They just published the corrals for this upcoming race, so I can give you kind of a better idea of the time gap in between. So give me a second as I'm pulling that up. So yeah, it is about a 50-minute drive. So I was fueling during. I had a bottle of Gatorade with me, and I had just like a protein granola bar because there's a lot of time. And what I did is go to Megan Featherston's page on Instagram. She's great about publishing how to handle the fueling, like for the New York Marathon and the Boston Marathon, because both of those races have significant time gaps between when you're going to start loading onto a bus or getting to the staging area versus when you actually get to start. And because so much time goes on, you do want to keep fueling a little bit as opposed to just, I'm going to get on the bus and I'm going to wait another 2 hours before I start the race and do nothing. So what I'll tell you there off the top of my head is that I can't tell you what my exact plan was, but I can tell you that it was just, she published something and I went and found it and said, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
I think one thing for, you know, people to keep in mind if they are running Boston or any race with transportation like this, especially if you are going to be starting in a later wave, is it would be better to go in with a full breakfast and have to make a bathroom stop than it would be to go in underfueled, afraid you're going to shit yourself.
Yeah.
And that was the conversation I had with one of our athletes that was, you might lose 20 minutes if you're underfueled, but you're going to lose a minute and a half if you have to stop and go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I think that is something for you to keep. I'm not saying like eat like a cheeseburger on the bus or anything, but you know, waking up and having like a legit breakfast is not a terrible idea, especially if you're a later wave start.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So like that day I would have woken up and had my typical oatmeal breakfast, piece of fruit before you guys picked me up. Then once I got on the bus, like I said, bottle of Gatorade for some carbs, granola bar for some carbs. So my start time last year for wave two was 10:25, and the buses for that started loading at 7:30. So you're talking about a three-hour gap. And what you have to keep in mind with Boston is that they don't drop you off at the start line. You get off the buses at a school, and that school is another 3/4 of a mile away from the start line. So you get to the school, and basically just, number one, it's open air. So part of what you're planning has to be is, what might the weather look like in Boston? If there's any threat of rain, you need to have something that you can have with you to keep you dry, because you're going to be standing around in the open air. I had throwaway clothes. I had a poncho. I took throwaway shoes. Like, I carried my race shoes with me, and I did not slip them on until I started the walk to the start line. There was a table. I just dropped those shoes off there. You do the 3/4 mile walk. You're just basically walking down a back road. And again, really cool people out on their porches supporting you, cheering for you. What is great is every single checkpoint, they're looking at your bib. The bibs are individually colored depending on what wave you're in.
Yeah.
So they can check that, and then they can check out what corral you're in. You get to the start line. It's incredibly well organized. It's nice because you and I have talked many times about how we hate some of the bigger city races where there's not really an easy way to get into your corral. Like, you're having to like cram past spectators and all that to get up to. With Boston, there is the main road that you start on, but then there is another side road that runs parallel to it. So you walk up that side road, you get to your corral, boom, here's my bib, and they shuffle you into that corral, and that's where you're at.
Your animation there was fun.
You like that?
I did. All right, so we're into, let's get into the race now.
Yeah.
How was the, you're running downhill at the start. How was the congestion? Yeah. Did it ever break up?
It does. So what I would tell you is, if you've never run a race as big as Boston before, except that there's going to be a lot of anxiety in the early miles, because there is no way to get into any sort of a rhythm that you want to get into. You are surrounded by people. There is nowhere to go. There's no room to be found. You've got your own little pod, and you are just basically hemmed in on all sides, and you're just, whatever pace the group sets is what you're going to do. And it is daunting because you are running downhill. So as you stand there at the start line and start looking ahead, you can see the thousands of people in front of you and just see that there's nowhere to go. And it for the first couple of miles, there was this anxiety of just like, holy hell, how am I ever going to get into a rhythm at all here? It starts to break up probably around mile four. When you hit mile four, there is a concrete divider in the middle of the road. And so the race kind of splits into two for a little bit. And that's where you start to find a little bit of room. Now, when I say room, I don't mean like the road clears in front of you. You are, if you decide you're going to pick it up a little bit, you're going to have to play a little bit of punt returner to get into a, you know, to find some space. But there's space to be found. The benefit of all that, though, is that I will tell you that from the start of that race, pretty much to the end, you're going to be dealing with spectators probably 3-4 deep the entire time. Like, you are never alone on that course. You are always supported, and they are so freaking happy you're there. And maybe the only downside to that is that there will be some spaces where, like, kids want to be out giving you a high five, but, like, there won't be fences. So it actually compresses the course a little bit. So there's times where, like, you feel like you've got your rhythm and you feel like you've got your room, but then all of a sudden you look ahead and people are kind of narrowing in a little bit. And it's because a lot of times there's kids out and they want you to high-five them, slap their hands. So it's just, it's the good and the bad of it. But you're running the Boston Marathon and getting that kind of support.
Right.
You take it.
It was cool where I was. I forget the neighborhood I was in. It was like we were at the bottom of a hill and you could hear the cascading cheers, especially like at the beginning, because it'll like as you have the elites come through, you know, you don't have a steady stream of people. You might mm-hmm. have 30 seconds or a minute between each runner, but you could just hear. Mm-hmm. It was just fun to like experience that. And I can't, well, I ran Chicago, so I have an idea of what that's about.
Yeah.
Is there any moment where, like, in Chicago, there was one part of the course where we did get, like, a break from the crowd, which was kind of welcome. Are there any moments where you do get a little break from the crowd? I know at the beginning of the course, there's not a ton of spectators. But, you know, beyond that, is there any moment where you get to kind of, like,
There is, and it's kind of well positioned because there's so mile eight is a bit of an uphill. It's not like what you encounter later on in Newton, but it's there. And one of the former champions had said that mile eight is nice because if you get up mile eight and you feel really good about how your run feels at that moment, it's kind of like a little bit of a check, hey, I feel really good. This might be my day. And I got up that hill last year. My target time to go under 3 hours would have been a 6:52 mile, and I got up that hill, I think it was about 6:40. And at that point, I was feeling good, and I wasn't breathing hard, and I remember thinking to myself, like, this might be my day. Let's see how I feel for the next 2 miles. And it flattens out, but you run past, I don't know if it's a lake or a reservoir, but there's water on either side of you. Like, if you watch the Boston Marathon telecast, you'll recognize the area that I'm talking about because there's water on both sides, and it does thin out, and there's not many people there. And so I was able to kind of, like, come down a little bit from just the hype of running the first 8 miles and having all that crowd support and kind of do like an internal check. Like, do I feel as good as I think I do?
Yeah.
And when I got through the next 2 miles running the same pace and could kind of not have that noise in my head, it allowed me to kind of get back into my own rhythm and feel good about where I was and kind of like remove myself from the fact that I was in the Boston Marathon. And then that's nice because that's mile 10. And then you start getting into Wellesley and you talked about the cascading cheers.
Yeah,
it's really cool because once you hit like mile 11, the crowd starts saying, hey, you're less than 2 miles from there. And like they don't even tell you what, you just know. And from about a mile out, you start to hear the girls and it is just it raises the hair on your arms. I actually think at one point when I got to the scream tunnel, I think I was running like a 6:15 pace at one point.
Jesus.
And for like the first part of it, like I was over by the girls. I was giving them high fives. And when I looked at my watch and saw 6:15, like, this is stupid.
Did you get a kiss? Did you kiss anyone?
I did not stop to get a kiss. I was way too good of a rhythm. So I actually, after when I looked at my watch and saw that pace, I'm like, okay, I need to kind of back off a bit. So I weaved a little bit to the left away from it, and I listened to it, but I didn't partake with it anymore.
Heartbreaker.
I know. I was on sub-3 pace for the first time ever. I was going to ride that.
Oh, man. But, yeah, you maybe ruined what could have been something special, Adam.
I know. She's been asking for numbers.
Right, right. real, I want to go through these real quick because this is just total logistical stuff. Water stops. I know there were plenty of them. Were they awesome. Easy? Was there in? Okay. No, real issues with those?
No.
Because I know sometimes they can be kind of a pain in the ass. Crowd support was good. We've done that. Course is a point to point. No. All right. So anything else you want to hit on the course before we head in onto Hereford?
Yeah. Yeah. Boston is known for the Newton Hills. What's great about the Newton Hills is that every single one, you get up the hill and then you get a flat stretch or you get a downhill to recover. I honestly still believe that Pittsburgh is a harder race than Boston because Pittsburgh, you have like four main climbs, but it is also like winding and rolling in between, and there's a ton of turns. What's great about Boston being point to point is really outside of the huge right turn by the Newton Firehouse and then, you know, the right on Hereford, left on Boylston, there's not a lot of turns. So even when you're going up those hills, they're in front of you, you can see what's coming, you get to the top of whatever hill you're on, there's four, and you get that down here, you get that flat stretch, you can recover, and really that helps you. And when you talk about support, like, that crowd is smart, they know their race, they know that that is the toughest part of the course. It was raining at that point, it was five deep, they are calling out your bib number, they are telling you that they believe in you, like, they will get you through that point. And then once you get past Heartbreak Hill, it's basically a net downhill from there, and you can, if you've timed it right and you didn't go out too hard at the beginning of the race, which is honestly hard to do with the crowd, if you can get to the top of Heartbreak with something left, it's downhill, it will pull you, and you can fly.
And like, to just express, or to, I guess, further go with, like, the how easy the course is, I did the Newton Hills the day before, and there was nothing, they were setting up the barricades and stuff, but I never had to worry about, you and Erica dropped me off, and I never had to worry about getting lost. It was just, you're just gonna meet us at this French bread place. Like, that was it. And that was 8 miles that I ran that day. So it was that easy. And I mean, you're obviously following the crowds and stuff like that too, but like, that's just how straight the course is as well.
Yeah.
It really is a, what it lacks in flat, it makes up for in straight. So, yeah.
And the only thing that happens there is it does toy with you. Cause once you get like actually over by the French bakery, you can see Boston in the distance. You can see the Citgo sign up there. And at that point you're about 3 miles away. And you know how marathons are, man. Like, you start to see, like, that end point, and you think, like, wow, it looks so close, and yet it's not close.
Yeah.
So that does mess with you, because those last 3 or 4 miles, it can kind of seem to take a while. Oh, and the last thing logistically, and this isn't something that maybe people who haven't run a race that's, like, done in waves might think about. Being in wave two things really mess with me in those late miles. Number one was that there were, like, organized street crossings where, like, there were volunteers that would shunt people across the course when there was a break, but they actually kind of like would let those people compress in a little bit, and you would go from like, you'd be on a 2-lane road and all of a sudden like you would see up ahead like it's compressing to a 1-lane road. That was jarring. And what really messes with you in those same points is that you start running into the back of the people in the previous wave who maybe didn't plan well or had a rough go on the hills,
right?
And like, I was cooking, I was running probably 6:30s at that point, and there's people up ahead that are like jogging or walking. And there's times it's like you're running and you're seeing all these people and the course is compressing. And it's like, oh, shoot, if I don't pick my head up, I'm going to run right in the back of this guy. So those last, like, coming out of Newton, there was a lot of, you've got to kind of keep your head up. Things by this point have really spaced out, but you have to keep in mind that there are going to be people ahead of you that are just not having their day. And if you're not paying attention, you can run smack into the middle, into the back of them. I actually almost had that happen going underneath the bridge right before the turn on the Hereford, where I knew my parents were kind of in that area. And I was looking around for them, and I'm going down that hill, and I just see this guy coming up on me, and I had to do a quick swerve around him. So keep that in mind. It you can run into people that are just haven't had their day.
Looking for people, that's an interesting concept, because I was screaming your name, and you didn't look for me. So let's see. You turned right on Hereford.
I'm hanging my head. Yeah.
You had one job. Right on Hereford. What was some of the, I mean, I know you have a ridiculously cheesy picture of you turning left on Boylston, but what was some of the feeling there? And obviously the crowd support, I'm assuming, is deafening at that point.
Yeah.
deafening, like the greased up deaf guy we mentioned last week.
Got to go back and listen to last week's episode.
Were you running through? You never go, okay? You're wasting your time. I love recording two episodes on the same day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what was that feeling like? Kind of take me through that last, normally I say 285 yards. Take me through the last full quarter mile there, or I guess 600 yards.
It comes up on you fast. You go underneath the bridge on Comm Avenue, and you come up the little hill, and the turn is right there. And, I mean, they're the two most famous directions in all of running. Right on Hereford. I called it out. I turned right. I went right on Hereford. And I turned left on Boylston. I said left on Boylston. And, you know, when I made the turn at that point, like, I've had never gone under three, and I knew I was going to do that. And at this point, like, I wasn't even thinking about my time. I just wanted to – I knew I was getting every single thing out of that race that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And, man, you make that turn on the Boylston, and you look ahead, and you see the finish line. And I think, you know, going back to what we had talked about being the anniversary of the bombings, we'd been there a couple days before. You remember what happened. It's really hard not to just get a little poignant about that. I don't even remember exactly what I was thinking about at that point. I had been very focused throughout training on just the people that had helped me get through so many different blocks of running, trying to get there. And, you know, so like my parents and my family are going through my head. You were going through my head, you know, other friends that, you know, have been on that journey with me. But also it's deafening because now you have spectators, but there's really tall buildings behind them. So all that noise is just compressed down onto that road. And I mean, man, it's all right there in front of you and you can see it. And having been on that, you know, having been on the road a couple days before where you see how long that stretch is. And that is the only thing that is hard is that it is a really long stretch. It's about 600 yards on Boylston that you go and you see the finish line and it feels like it's going to take forever to get there. But man, it is like this 600 yard celebration.
I feel like it's not long enough. Like, I feel like when I do get to do that, I'm going to be like, man, that was too quick. Like that was a little bit how I felt at Chicago and Chicago's finish was nothing compared to Boston. Cause like the elites had finished. So people were filtering out at that point. That's an amazing, you know, when I've heard you talk about it before, I just am, you know, gosh, I'm already getting FOMO now. And I'm thinking about, like, how I got to get there. Because, yeah, I want to experience that. I want to experience that exact feeling. That half mile or so right there. It's... Having been there, I want to, like, I got emotional when we were heading to the expo. Like, I remember there was a moment where I was standing there and I was taking pictures and I just kind of stood there and I had my sunglasses on and Erica, it was just me and Erica at the time. And she turns around and she looks at me and she's like, "Oh, I'm just not going to say anything." She could see what was going on. And she just kind of left me to myself. So I'm glad you got to experience that. And yeah, people be ready. I mean, don't like soak it in. Pull a Jim and Pam and, you know, mental pictures, like do everything you can to like be prepared for that moment and try to make sure that you store that somewhere in your head, because you're never going to get that. Yeah, especially if it's your first time, you're not going to get that first time back.
When you talk about the cheesy picture, and it's me with this giant smile on my face and like I've actually got like my tongue between my teeth, and and that's why like I'm really happy that I knew when I made that turn that I was getting everything out of the race that I wanted to, that I wasn't trying to like fight for a PR or anything, because I really could. Just that in that moment, that's me saying, holy shit, I've done this. Like, I've not just run the Boston Marathon. I'm finishing it. I'm getting everything that I want out of this race. I'm experiencing this atmosphere around me. It was just the coolest feeling, because everything I could have wanted out of that race I waited so long to get to, just it happened that day for me.
All right, so you crossed the finish line. Logistics-wise, take us through some of that. Like, what was the process, you know, picking up your medal, picking up your gear, things like that? And you're wet and cold and had just run a, PR at this time. Like, how long did it feel like it took you, and how long did it actually take you?
This is where, you know, I talked about how the buses are set up beyond the finish line to pick up your gear. You know, so you go and you get your medal and you get more food. And they actually have people like up on like towers that are I think they're doing two things. One is I think they're just making sure that nobody's in medical distress. They did this at Pittsburgh too. But also, you know, there was a big race that day because Elliott was running Boston for the first time, and somebody in one of those towers was just calling out results. And so you start hearing, you know, who's won the race, and you're not hearing Kipchoge's name at all. And so I remember, like, stopping and asking, like, where did Eliud finish? And he finished sixth. You know, so that was really cool to go through. So you get through all of that, and there's, you talk about a cheesy picture. This is a great picture where, like, I'm grinning ear to ear. And I'm, like, walking. I got my Mylar blanket around me now, and I'm walking. I got this giant grin on my face, and right over my shoulder, one of the marathon photo pictures, is this guy who just, like, looks like he's dying. It is, like, it is the marathon personified in two people. So, unfortunately, the bus that I had to go to pick up my gear was as far away from the finish line as you could possibly get. It was, like, right on the corner of Boylston, and, like, you would cross the street to get to the park where the bus is loaded. So it was a very long walk to get there. And now you're right. It was, like, temperature-wise that day, it was perfect. It was about 50 degrees. But it had been misty and drizzly most of the day. And then it just flat out opened up on us at around mile 22, mile 23. So I'm soaked. And now all that body temp that I worked up during the race is dissipating. And I'm getting cold. So I got to make this huge walk. I don't know how long it was, but it felt like forever because my body at that point was starting to scream. It felt like it probably took me at least 10 minutes to get to the bus. Then you got to get everything off. And it is still raining, so it's really hard to, like, get all this wet clothing off. I mean, you know how wet running clothing clings to you. It's tough to get all that stuff off. Then you got to get stuff on, and I'm shivering, I'm freezing, I'm really cold. And then the only thing that I don't like about after the race is that there's essentially a family staging area. It's a few blocks over from Boylston. And what is cool about it is they have signs. Like, you go to, you know, last name starts with W. You go to that sign, and you tell your family that's where you have to meet. But it's so many blocks over from Boylston, and it's not like there's a whole lot of areas where people can be spectating in that area. If you don't make it to, like, actually spectate on Boylston, it's a long walk for people to get there. So I waited forever to reunite with my parents. And
Boylston,
my plan had been,
is a mess.
Like, it's a madhouse.
Like, downtown Boston is insane. And if you're trying to get anywhere near the course to spectate, good luck if you're directly downtown.
And what complicated that day was, because the weather was bad, the Red Sox game that was supposed to be going on was in a delay. I actually don't know if they ended up playing that day. But so you had 30,000 people that had been at the Red Sox game that at that point, I finished around 1:30. That game usually starts at 11. So a lot of people had just given up. And so now they're trying to take the tee back, and they're getting off to kind of, some of them are getting off to see what's going on with the race. Other people are getting on the tee. So it's just, it's a madhouse trying to reunite with people. My original plan had been to stay down there to see, you know, to meet up with you and see Josh finish, to see Erica finish. And I was just so cold and it was so chaotic that we ended up deciding to go back. And then you talk about logistics, as they will tell you in Boston, the tea is garbage. And the train that I was on actually, like, broke down. So I'm standing on this, packed subway. There's nowhere to sit. I'm standing after running this race. My body is dying, and we're stopped and we're waiting. We waited for like an hour, and then they finally, like, backed it up and they took us back to where we started. We had to get off at the same place we'd, you know, loaded onto in downtown. We ended up, like, calling an Uber and picking up an Uber, but getting back to our hotel was like a 2-hour odyssey.
All right, what are you going to do? This is the first time I'm going to ask this question in this format. Yeah. Because this is such a big race with so many logistical things. You hadn't experienced it before.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me some of the shit showy things that happened.
Yeah.
What types of things are you looking to do differently this year? Because I can tell you there's a 0% chance I would ever step foot on a train after a race for that exact reason. Also, like, the family meet, like, that being a mess. You know, I'm curious what your thoughts are looking at this year to make it not so miserable. Also, the thought of being stuck on a train when you're like, I'm also flying out of here tonight.
It was awful.
Good God. Like, that would almost kill the enjoyment of the entire trip for me.
Right.
What are you doing differently this year?
So, big picture, number one, we're actually not flying this year. My mom's dad grew up in Vermont, and he'd always wanted to have his ashes scattered back where he grew up. And just, there's never been, like, an opportunity to go back there. So we decided to drive, and we're going to, you know, we're going to break up the trip in the 2 days. We're going to drive back home through Vermont. We're actually, you end up driving pretty close on the way back home through New York over by Cooperstown. So I think the plan is to stop at Cooperstown on the way home too. Yeah. But so we're getting there a little bit earlier.
See Greg Maddux?
See Greg Maddux. All those fucking Braves. Anyway, you had to bring up the Braves. You had to upset me. We're going to stay a day later. So there's not going to be that immediacy to get out. We're going to the Red Sox game the next night, so there's not that immediacy to get out. Like, I actually want to do what you ended up doing last year, which is just hanging out with Erica and getting drunk and just enjoying celebrating the fact that we ran a race. Yeah. So as far as, like, meeting up with my family, we haven't discussed the logistics of that yet, but I want to find out exactly where they plan on going and kind of look at a map and figure out, like, where the best place to meet up will be, because it might not be that family staging area. Now that we know the city a little bit more, we can kind of sort out where some areas might be to meet up that doesn't necessarily have to be that family staging area.
Right.
I'm going to talk with Erica about how I want to get down there, because we're both, like, we both basically bumped up a wave. She went from wave 3 to wave 2 with her Chicago time. So she's going to be taking off when I did last year. I moved from wave 2 to wave 1, so I take off at 10. So it's a situation of, do I want to put them in a position where they've got to get up even earlier to get me down there, or do I just basically pay for an Uber to drive down there? Like, it's right. going to be through the roof, but if I've got to do that, like, I'm going to take care of it that way. Getting back, I think, is probably going to come down to what the weather looks like. If it's a lot like last year, where it's going to be wet and cold and miserable, I'm not going to stay down there. But if it's nicer... And Erica keeps swearing that what always happens with Boston is the weather's crappy right up through training, and then we get the, like, they get the first, like, 70-degree day on race day. She's manifesting that, by the way.
I know.
She needs to stop. But if it's a nicer day, I'll stay down there, because it's a lot nicer when you're not cold and wet and miserable. And if it's comfortable temperatures, I want to see her come across. I'll stay down there and try to find a spot probably about a little bit back on the course where I can watch some people come across or meet up with, like, Erica afterwards. And then if we're doing that, it might be a situation where, like, I have her and Niles take us back to where we're going to be staying.
Right.
We're not doing the hotel this year. We right now have an Airbnb that's in a similar area, so still in Erica's neighborhood. Now, apparently her neighbor is applying to do Airbnb, and if she gets the application, she's going to do, like, a family and friends rate. That weekend, and my parents would end up staying next door to Erica, and then I would stay with Erica and Niles, and it would be way less expensive. But we're 3 weeks out, and I haven't heard on that yet, so I don't know what that's going to mean.
Just look out for Erica's bar stools if you do stay there.
Okay.
They're a disaster, and they will destroy your feet.
Okay, that's good to know.
I curse those things. I have PTSD from them. But I hit my toes on them a lot coming out of their bathroom.
This is good to know. Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Yep. Cool. Well, I mean, I think we pretty much naturally, I think, kind of hit everything. I think the one thing I didn't ask was, like, is there any type of party afterwards? Which there, I don't believe there is, like, a sanctioned one, but there are parties everywhere.
There's parties
the
everywhere.
Boston area.
There is a sanctioned one that Sam Adams sponsors, but you have to pay to get into it, and it's not cheap, and I'm not paying to go to a Sam Adams party.
right.
And actually, they have a tent set up anyway that you can get into, like, after the expo, that's really, really cool. So I, you know, one thing that I took away from Chris Gutierrez, Chris does a really cool thing when he goes to races where he'll go, like, a week early and just, like, enjoy the area, almost treat it like a vacation. Mm-hmm. And I will always be grateful to Chris sharing that before Boston last year, because I was much more low-key about stuff. Like, I didn't get drunk, but, like, I would go to the Sam Adams tent and have one of the 26.2 brews. I would have a beer at dinner. So my plan is still going to be to go find that tent after the expo and just hang out there and have a drink. But no, I'm not doing anything sanctioned after the race. I'll probably go to the Tracksmith House this time and get a banner of my time printed. And then it'll probably be, like, what Erica wants to do. Like, a lot of it's going to be me hanging out with Erica.
Yeah. Yeah, from a coaching aspect, to kind of hit on what you just talked about, I think, if you kind of don't let loose and get hammered, but don't make it too big of an event. You know, I think when you allow yourself to, I'll have a beer or two. You know, we went to the Red Sox game the day before, and I mean, you had two or three beers, I think, didn't you?
Like, I think I had a beer at the game, and then I had a beer at dinner that night. But like typically in the past, I wouldn't have done that. I would have been like, no, no drinking. Screw that.
Well, I was just doing our taxes. Those receipts must have been all me then. But regardless, I think that it's important to, you know, remember why we do this. And yeah. It's because we enjoy it. We're not professionals. You're paying to do this.
Yeah.
And especially a race like Boston, you're paying a lot of money to do it, even if you do it cheap. I mean, it's going to be a it's going to be an expensive trip. So, yeah, enjoy it. And it's a city to be enjoyed, too. It's a great place to be. And I see why people want to keep going back, because there's so much to experience each time you do.
You brought up the Jim and Pam thing, you know, the taking the occasional like mental snapshot. Mm-hmm. Make sure you do it. Like when I got to the start line, I took like 30 seconds to just do a complete 360 at the start line area and look around and just allow myself to say, hey, I'm here. When I was running the race, like a marathon's a long time to be mentally engaged. There's absolutely nothing wrong with taking 30 seconds out every couple miles and just allow yourself to kind of like wash in the atmosphere and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. When I crossed the finish line, I actually got past and I got out of the way, but I turned around and I stopped and I looked back down Boylston onto the course and just allowed myself to say like, oh, like this was really cool.
Yeah.
Like this was an amazing experience. Do that, because whether it's your first, whether it's, you know, one after that, Boston's unique. It's a really hard race to get into. It's the world's oldest continuously running marathon. Like it's special. Allow yourself to enjoy the fact that it's special.
Yeah. I think that's a good note to end on. I hope you have a great time this year.
Thank you.
I know you will. And I'm, you know, again, a little FOMO, but I'll be at the beach.
You.
I'll be in the middle of the ocean a couple weeks later. So
my trade-offs,
my FOMO will quickly evaporate. I think it's nice that you were able to come on and do this. And,
yeah.
It's good to have to sit across the computer screen from you for a couple hours and go through this stuff, talk about running. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Boston's going to be special. Everybody, make sure you go follow Adam at Wheels Up in CLE. You can follow his journey at Boston. He'll probably be posting plenty on our business account as well at Rust Belt Running. And maybe I'll give him my personal account, make it look like I'm there too. Just do what I did in Chicago. I'll send you the picture. I'll Photoshop a Boston bib onto my Chicago bib, and then you can get pictures of me throughout Boston holding up a little bib.
He's here.
Oh, shit. I'm going to do that. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. One more time, just like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. That does help us out tremendously.
Yeah.
To anybody who's running Boston, we wish you the absolute best, throughout your training. And, I mean, you're coming into taper now by the time this is published. So, good Lord. It's here, guys. So, enjoy it. Take every moment in, like Adam said. Like really enjoy it and enjoy it. Don't freaking stress. This is fun and it's a lot of fun. Special time. All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Check out rustbeltrunning.com. You can learn more about our different offerings in run coaching and how to support the show. And until next time, enjoy your miles, everybody.
I love my log.